Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast. College basketball officially in the rearview mirror with North Carolina being crowned national champion without the refs having their say in what went on. I'm your host, Todd Furman, and you can follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman, and joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only, the incomparable, at Payne Insider.
That was an interesting intro.
I mean, I'm trying to mix it all up. Normally I get like, what, 8-9 months to figure out what I want to say to lead in after football season's over. Just doing multiple sports things has completely thrown me off my game.
I hear you. Yeah. Roy Williams, another championship. Good grief.
Hey, sometimes it just goes to show that the talent trumps your inability to make executive decisions on the sidelines when it matters most.
He's a good president. He's a good CEO. He hires great employees, plucks good talent. Now, it's college basketball talent. I wouldn't say it's elite talent that's going off to the NBA when you talk about Jackson probably being the top prospect on their team. What is he? A mid-first-round pick at best? Probably towards
I think he probably after the lottery. Yeah, maybe translates to a role player at best at the next level. I can't see him being an impact player.
There's not a ton of talent. It's good college basketball players, I guess, is what it translates to. But onwards and upwards, golf podcast, here we are. What have we become?
I know you're excited. This is Masters Week, baby. And since you and I are both veteran golf handicappers, clearly we're going to add an element to a lot of people's ability to make money this weekend at Augusta, right?
I'm exhausted. A lot of prep, a lot of dedication. Pulled the all-nighter last night. Ran the movie Gauntlet. Happy Gilmore, Tin Cup, Caddyshack. It was all in prep for this podcast.
Did you watch all the Caddyshacks or just Caddyshack the first one?
Just the first one.
Okay. See, when you talk about Tin Cup, I can see you pulling a Kevin Costner type move, busting out your 7-iron and trying to knock the ball down the path or whatever the hell happens in that scene to try and hustle guys at the range.
I'll be honest with you. I was looking for a player in this field that had the old steroid jerk, and I think the only one that doesn't, he's not joining us for this tournament. Yeah, Tiger Woods is out of this, so you quickly got to move past Tiger Woods and find the next best golfer.
See, I figured you'd be trying to find some book that was going to hang John Daly future so you could invest there.
Oh, poor guy. Very interesting Snapchat he's got going on there. He is a ball of joy.
I'm not sure I even want to know what he's doing. I'm not even sure why I want to know what he's doing on his Snapchat.
He's got a kid coming up. Looks identical. So that should be interesting to monitor over the next decade or so.
Is he properly marketing different alcohol brands on his Snapchat?
It's a lot of cigarettes. It's a lot of Coca-Cola.
Nice. Well, at least John's taking advantage of his platform as a social influencer, his ability to make a few extra dollars. But I digress completely, and I know folks who are tuning in to listen to the Masters podcast, Payne, they didn't come to hear you and I. We brought in two heavy hitters in the industry. Leading odds maker in the field of golf, Jeff Sherman, stops by to talk some numbers, the process that goes into setting all of these numbers, and a man who covers the sport intimately on a daily basis for Golf Channel, Will Gray. I think people are going to be pretty intrigued by what these two fine gentlemen have to say and what they can add to the handicapping discussion.
Yeah, without doubt. I mean, I think we're both pretty self-aware here. That's something we kind of hang our hats on when we decided to dive into other sports. We're going to rely on the expertise of others. And I think, you know, you broke out your Rolodex and got us two great guests this week.
When we talk about other sports, though, there's some interesting things on the horizon here for us at Bet the Board. We're still working on our NBA playoff coverage, and of course, we'll announce some of those details. Obviously, once the field of 16 is set, we know the matchups. We'll get Dave Mason from Bet Online back on here to talk about some of the numbers, futures, liabilities. But for all that information, all of our loyal listeners can follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. We'll share some of that relevant information when it becomes available. And I know, Payne, we threw out a couple ideas, maybe opening round and then each round as we advance in, maybe do a podcast length of pod differing based on some of the matchups we have.
Is that you publicly locking me into a commitment?
No, I'm not publicly locking you into
no, I'm just messing
anything.
With you.
There's no verbal contract. Hey, there's no verbal contracts in this business. What I may publicly have to lock you into is an official declaration that we could be the only one to talk about the NFL draft and a lot of the props associated with that.
Well, you just, you know, the cat's out of the bag now. Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. So now that you've thrown that out of the bag, I'm sure there'll be other podcasts that in the sports betting realm that delve into that, of course.
Well, I mean, they're going to mimic us on that the same way they do just about everything else we do. So this should be no different.
All right. You're trying to set me up here, I feel like.
All right. No, I'm not trying to set you up for anything. But what I will say is for folks that are looking to try and get a few dollars into action, check out promotions page at BetOnline. Like I said, no Dave Mason today, but doesn't stop what BetOnline is doing for the Bet the Board listeners. The website, promotions.betonline.ag/BetTheBoard. I think I got all that right. Promotions for reload bonuses, 35 BTB. New signups, 75 BTB. I think I got that readout correctly, Payne, but I'm not quite sure.
No, it sounds good. It sounds right, good. Okay. And the guys that we have on this podcast, you're definitely going to want to dump in some money because I have a feeling they're going to drop some gems for us.
Oh, there's no doubt about that, and those will be forthcoming. And as you mentioned, being a good sports bettor, all about identifying the edge, strengths, and weaknesses. Safe to say that golf doesn't exactly fall into our wheelhouse. So with that, we welcome in our first guest. He's one of the sharpest golf odds makers out there right now. You can visit his website, golfodds.com, or see him honing his craft as manager of the Westgate Superbook. Follow him on Twitter at golfodds. Jeff, welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, my friend.
Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. You're going to have to try and make us look like the experts here. We know golf not exactly in our wheelhouse, but before we get into the Masters, first things first, how the hell does one decide to throw himself into becoming a golf-centric odds maker?
It wasn't by choice. It's when I started in the business. And I worked it up, booked it up, promoted, making their own odds at the IP, Imperial Palace, back in the 90s with my current boss, Jay Cornegay. And if you wanted to move up, you had to learn different sports. And at the time, this is the one that I got thrust into. And so Jay and Kirk Brooks, who was running the book back at the time, just had me learn the ins and outs of this, which not too many books offered it back then. So I learned it and, you know, just kept doing it, and it just grew on me and been over 20 years now. So got a pretty good grasp on it, a good routine, and, you know, it's just part of what I do, part of the fabric.
Were you a golf fan to begin with, or was it just kind of something, hey, this is a need, this is how you have to kind of show your worth to the organization? We don't care if you're a golf fan to begin with, throw yourself into it full bore.
No, I didn't know much about it. You know, I casually played back in college and moved out here right after college and started learning about it, but it wasn't too high on my list. I was big in the NBA, and so I just learned about it. It was something that they wanted me to take on, and, you know, I accepted the role, and it's been a mainstay ever since.
Yeah, it always pays to find that specialty and the niche that's out there, and I guess the logical segue and follow-up to that is, what kind of evolution have you seen for the golf betting market over the course of your 20 years? Have you seen a continued increase in popularity, whether it's the outright or matchups, in terms of the way not only the professional bettors assess the market, but maybe some of the way the recreational bettors decide to get involved and throw a little skin in the game?
Yeah, it's progressed just like we've seen along the lines with Super Bowl. When we do our Super Bowl props that we're known for, and when we get to the majors, we offer a wide variety of propositions for it. And back in the 90s, we just offered a few. And so that's really expanded. Lately, too, one of the more popular things that we do is round-by-round updated betting. So after the second, third round on a weekly basis, we offer updated odds, which we didn't do before. And that's become really popular. But the most popular segment of the entire betting market is the outrights, and that has progressed over time. It's gotten to a point now in the last few years that for the majors, I offer every golfer listed to win the tournament instead of having a field option, just because our software technologies allowed that recently. But generally, the average golf bettor likes to walk away from the window with a certain name on their ticket rather than the field, so we try to accommodate that on a weekly basis. We don't so much need that. We pretty much account for the golfers that most people are looking for, so I'll offer 49 in the field just to save some time on that aspect. But on the majors, we definitely offer the complete list of golfers, and that's proven real popular lately.
Oh, and you talk about list of golfers. I guess the obvious question here, after seeing your tweet, you said Tiger, despite his current form or lack thereof, was a top five tick account and had created some massive liability for the house. I know you and I joke about it being the equivalent right now where he's at in his career to what the U.S. men's soccer team does for World Cup liability. Is betting golf better or worse without Tiger in the mix, in your opinion?
Oh, it's definitely better. There's no question about it. You know, if he's playing solid and competing, which we haven't seen for a while, obviously, he commands larger bets at those lower odds. And even if he's not in good form, or, I mean, he's in as poor a form as he's ever been with his back injuries and pulling out of tournaments. He's been 100-1 for the past few months, but he still commands interest in that. And prior to him pulling out last Friday, he was our largest liability on the betting board. He was top five in ticket count. Even today, the day prior to the Masters, he's still 11th in ticket count when all these other golfers have had the opportunity to gain in the last few days. And he's still up there, even though we haven't taken tickets in the last 5 or 6 days.
That's really interesting, Jeff. And kind of just the overall Masters picture, what's the process for setting odds when it comes to a lot of your outrights or props?
Well, we have to look at current form, course form, take that combination into account, and then take in the public perception on who we think people are going to spread their money out on. So we'll just take the list of entrants and categorize them and then start assigning odds to them and play with it until I'm comfortable putting something up. Once we do, then we'll let the money dictate that and then update it over time as current form becomes more prevalent. We've seen guys like Hideki Matsuyama, Justin Thomas, go on some winning streaks towards the end of last year. That dramatically decreased their odds. So we just take a look at that aspect. A course like Augusta is more unique than other ones because I'll put more course form stock in than I will traditionally on a weekly basis. Guys that have played well at Augusta can come in poor form and still play well there. We've seen that over time. So I'll have to put more stock in that when I'm handicapping the numbers and putting these up.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Just to kind of touch on things, lots of guys dealing with issues off the course this week. Jason Day, Gary Woodland. I saw even Jimmy Walker with mono. Any major adjustments you've made from, you know, a bookmaker perspective on those guys?
Well, Jason Day is most notable. You know, he opened a 7-1 favorite when I first put these up last August. His form has not been that solid this year, and we understand now why, with his mother battling cancer. And so with his uncertainty going into the tournament, I had bumped him up. He's as high as 15-1 now. I was 20-1 briefly yesterday and saw some support for him, but he settled at 15-1, which given his Masters form and his last couple years of form is relatively high. So that's made an adjustment because the bettors have been shying away somewhat. So out of the top four guys that were used to seeing now between Dustin Johnson, McIlroy, Spieth, and Day. Day is our best position. He's received the least amount of support amongst those four golfers. Gary Woodland was a similar type of thing. With his odds were 150-1 to open up. He was actually bet down to 80-1, but with what's going on with his wife, eased him out to 100-1 because the support has shied away ever since that news came out a couple weeks ago. So we'll make those type of adjustments, and you know, usually see the support slow down when that type of news filters out.
Yeah, and just another follow-up here. You talked about the history and using the data points and then, again, using form. Adam Scott, probably a good example, 45th 2 weeks ago, missed the cut last week, the flat stick kind of failing him a little bit, but he has had good success at Augusta National. Kind of how do you weigh that out with a guy like Adam Scott this week?
Yeah, you know, I've kept him around 25-1 for most of the time, and his support has subsided a little bit, and so he's out to 30-1 to try to attract more, but he still gets it. It's been steady, but smaller tickets, not anything larger, so we're in a real strong position. I think 30-1 is about good. I know on someone like him, if I went 40-1, I think our position would quickly dissipate on where we're at, so there's no need to do that. Another guy along those lines that you just mentioned, Bubba Watson, a two-time winner there, traditionally has gotten strong support. He's been in really poor form to start the season, and his odds are all the way to 40-1. He's really not seeing much support at the betting window. So I can I'm in such a good position on him that I can go 40 and even take some decent sized wagers and it wouldn't fluctuate too much. So it's all a feeling out process. And, you know, it's really on a case by case basis on where we expect to see the money.
Well, when we talk about players form, and we know Augusta, as you said, provides some unique challenges, given it's the one major that is played at the same location year in, year out. The other thing grabbing headlines right now, Jeff, is the weather. It's been the major point of discussion, the talk that rain could really soften the course, maybe giving some of the bigger hitters on tour an even bigger advantage than what they normally have when they go there. How do you look to try and handle that, or does that just play into more of the handicapping side than it does the odds making, knowing that the course could play differently than when you originally set some of those numbers?
No, it absolutely does play in, and it affected what I did with some of the propositions. I waited until Tuesday to get up the winning score and the lowest round and the cut score, because Thursday and Friday are supposed to have extremely strong winds, not supposed to be much rain or anything. The rain is supposed to come today on Wednesday, the day before, which can soften the course up, like you said. But we're expecting some really strong winds the first 2 days and then a really nice weekend after that. So you're going to be seeing the front end of the tournament affected. And so I had to adjust my props, and I waited to see a stronger forecast for that one. And I usually put up over under first round scores by golfers, and I'm not doing that because, you know, as high as I would like to go on those, I'm sure it would be one-way betting. So I'm going to resume that probably for the third and fourth round when the conditions subside and they're more apt to what we're used to. And then as far as the outrights, you can start to look at some golfers that play better in the wind. And so it can alter your handicapping from that point. And it's really had me focus on a couple guys based on their current form, their course form, and now the weather conditions. And I think Justin Rose and his odds around 25-1, and Paul Casey in the 40-50-1 range are two guys that fit all that criteria that can be helped along with what's going on with the tournament and the conditions, and a couple guys that I would look at based on all of our current information.
I mean, there's so many different things that go into it. I feel like, obviously, every sport provides its unique challenges. I know when we look at some of the golf front, there are players and debutants that are collecting all sorts of buzz. Justin Thomas, probably the one player that sticks out to me. How do you go about handicapping and setting prices on guys that have really caught this tour by storm but aren't familiar with some of the challenges and nuances that Augusta National provides?
Well, two of those guys, like you mentioned, Justin Thomas one, John Rahm is the other one. John Rahm looks like he's on the path, just what Jordan Spieth did, a meteoric rise, and he's got the most potential of these young guys. But he's a first-time entrant at Augusta here. Justin Thomas played last year and finished 39th. So the one thing about these young golfers, when I first put these odds up last August, those two were each 80-1, and you tend to see more betting support for them over the time, people taking shots, because over the 8 months, how many things can change with how quickly these guys can progress. So their odds are down to Thomas 30-1 and Rahm 20-1. Now, Thomas, I'm not so trustworthy with as far as what his current form is. John Rahm, he's been top of the world, right there with the best players, the way that he's running right now. I think John Rahm is the one case that his confidence on the course and the different courses and different golfers that he's been up against, his confidence is going to outweigh his lack of experience. And it wouldn't surprise me at all to see him on the top of the leaderboard right near it come Sunday. So I don't blame anyone for wanting to support him in the 20-25-1 range. Someone like Thomas, I think that his confidence, I know he won three tournaments earlier this year, but his current form, I think that'll take away from where his confidence might be right at this point. And just with the lack of experience together, I don't put as much into him as I do someone like John Rahm.
So many different things to consider. I mean, as you mentioned, when you walk to the window, looking at some of the matchups, some of the outrights, the various propositions you have, whether that be, you know, over under winning score. We know that, you know, a lot of other books have some different numbers out there, Bet Online listing a menagerie of propositions to go along with some of the things that you guys have available at Westgate. Before we get into, you know, the brass tacks and some of your strong leans and or recommendations, what kind of advice would you offer up to a casual golf fan, maybe trying to bet the Masters for the first time, or make a much more concerted effort to commit to handicapping golf? How should they go about getting their start? Your site, a great source of information, but some of the other things that you might recommend to someone relatively new to this field.
Well, the first thing is, if you're going to get into betting it seriously, you want to end up investing more in the matchups than the outrights. If you're going to do the outrights, I get involved during the majors and once in a while on a weekly basis, and especially for a major, like, I know everyone wants to go with the top guys. If you want to take a little bit on those and put them as part of your portfolio, I would look deeper down the list and look for some longer shots. It's tough. You're not getting much value on the guys at the short odds and the single digits at this point. So I would look for the value down the board where some of those guys might be bumped up just because the top favorites are so low. But definitely the matchups is the way to go to do well in the long run as far as handicapping this. It's just when you're up against one golfer, it's obviously tremendously easier to beat 140 golfers, in this case 93 other golfers this week for the Masters. But you can find advantages in the matchup market. And one thing you can note is you can look down the odds to win list, and when you look at the matchups, you'll often see one golfer favored over another in the matchup, but yet his odds are higher in the outright market. And the matchup market is more of a true indication on the power ratings of these guys, and you can read a lot into that. So to get more involved in the matchups, I would definitely keep stats on current form and course form as the two strongest, and then you can get deeper into it if you want to look at fairways hit, greens in regulation, putting stats. But definitely course form and current form are the two things you have to keep up with.
That's great advice, and I think we talk about it all the time, Payne, especially throughout the course of football season and baseball. Futures are a good indication of public perception as much as anything else, but regular season win totals often a greater reflection of a team's overall power profile. So, Jeff, to hear you say that, I think will resonate with a lot of the folks that have been with us for the last few years. Before we let you go, our listeners, when they're trying to figure out, and use the word portfolio, looking to build, you mentioned a slew of names. We know folks are going to be involved in daily fantasy. They're going to have their office pools when they have to look at some of the favorites, the mid-tier and long shots. Maybe throw out a few names if you can on a matchup, if you're so inclined, that jumped off the page and might give our folks a chance to get a little proverbial skin in the game from Thursday to Sunday if possible.
Well, one of the matchups that's readily available, I like Charlie Hoffman over Danny Willett. I'm fading Willett anywhere that I can this week. He won last year, and that was a lot to do with Spieth. And he did play well at the end, but, you know, Spieth was the major story behind his collapse last year to help Willett get the W. And Willett has not started off too well this season. His odds have drifted out to 125-1 from opening 50. But as far as matchups, he's definitely one that I'm looking at fading. And, you know, it's often easier when you're betting the matchups to find the guy that you want to fade rather than finding the guy you want to be on, because everyone knows when they're handicapping that what to expect on these guys running well. But if you look for the ones that are running poorly to fade, that usually holds more true to form and is a better way to handicap it. So the one that's readily available, I would say Hoffman over Willett.
That's Jeff Sherman. He's one of the best in the business and, of course, a must-follow on Twitter, not only for the Masters but golf tournaments throughout the year, and you can do that at Golf Odds. One last thing, Jeff, before I let you go. Have you been able to rein in your wife's disdain for the Las Vegas Raiders before they start play here? I know she's going to listen, and I know she's got her Bronco gear ready to go, but have you been able to rein in the disdain for the Raiders being the local team?
Yeah, she's it's a two-way street for her. I mean, she's it's tough for her to deal with her rival coming to town, but at the same time, she's going to be able to see her beloved Broncos each and every year once the stadium is built. So, you know, it's just a 10-minute drive from our house rather than a few-hour flight to catch them at the next closest stadium. So it's she's excited that she'll have that opportunity, but at the same time, she would have preferred any other team to be coming here. But it's a, it's a great thing for Vegas, and she's still excited about it.
Hey, we know you love those frigid temperatures against some of the AFC West rivals that the Denver Broncos take on through the rest of the year. Jeff, again, we can't thank you enough. I know it's a busy time of year for you. Best of luck over the course of the Masters, and hopefully some of those folks that have not created a whole lot of liability find themselves donning the green jacket come Sunday at Butler Cabin.
All right, thanks, guys.
Fascinating thought process, Payne, about how to handle building a card for a major tournament like the Masters. Really resonates for someone like myself who puts together a NASCAR, and I love Jeff's use of the word because we throw it around all the time, portfolio, when you're trying to identify opportunity, matchups, props, outrights. It's not like you're walking to the window looking to try and pick one golfer and hoping you can catch lightning in a bottle.
No, absolutely not. Just like the stock market, you definitely don't want to have all your eggs in one basket. You want to spread that money out a little bit. And Jeff is just, you know, top notch. We're not going to be able to give much greater information than he just gave. And I know he's playing a little coy, you know, great odds maker, fantastic golf bettor. So when he gives you something, you listen. That's for sure.
Yeah, I didn't think we were going to be able to pull a matchup out when I talked to him before. So getting that Willett Gold, the fade potential there, I'm sure folks will be looking to dabble and go against the defending champion. The weather playing a big role. It was interesting to get Jeff's thoughts on some of those components. And look at you throwing out some names, talking about players with mono, current form. I don't even know who you are. I'm glad to see you put that all-nighter to good use for us.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that in the movie. Saw that in the movie.
Something tells me that didn't pop up in the movie. I mean, you know, modesty over there isn't something in an adjective that I'd normally use to describe you. But apparently, when I take you out of your comfort zone, which is typically the NFL, college basketball, the NBA, that other side of pain starts to show up. It's a gentler, softer side.
Yeah, there was actually a little prep and a little work that I had to do.
Wait a second. There was a little prep and work. So you don't put any prep and work into the other sports we cover? It just comes naturally to you?
These games just pick themselves, my friend.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ. You're gonna deliver that line? That may be another t-shirt slogan right now. The games just pick themselves.
Very fortunate, I will say that. Very, very fortunate to have the access that I have to a lot of the sharpest guys, so...
Definitely comes in handy. Yeah. Have you seen, and I wanted to ask you that, and you know, we could come back to it later. Have you seen any interesting stuff from some of the professionals in terms of golf matchups or any outrights on your side thus far?
I will say this. The one thing that I have seen, and it's pretty odd, there's not been much to come across so far. This, let's just put it out there. The golf information in general, there's not a lot of guys doing it. There's a handful of very sharp guys doing it, and everyone wants access to that. And for the people giving out that information, they know that information is being dispersed. So they've gone later and later in the week in terms of getting down. I did see Louis Oosthuyzen. I'm probably going to butcher his name.
That was pretty good.
Top 20 finish. That was like plus $1.75. That's down to like plus 160. So I did see that come across. But nothing else too crazy at this point. They've been really waiting to go the night before and sometimes very, very first thing in the morning because they know that information is really getting out there right now.
I will say one thing. I spoke to a pretty prominent professional bettor. And he said that the weather was impacting a lot of what they were doing. They weren't quite sure they were going to have the same size, depth type of card they normally put forth in the Masters, given some of those unique challenges. So I'd have to imagine there will be professionals that are looking to attack this on a round-by-round basis, more so than looking to go for the full 72 holes.
Yeah, it sounds like the first 2 days could be absolute hell. And then, you know, as we transition to the weekend, things pick up a little bit. But... you got to be in it to win it. So if you can't overcome the first 2 days, it's irrelevant of what you're going to do in perfect conditions on the weekend. So the weather is going to play a huge role here. And I think Jeff said that's why they've been reluctant to post those round one matchups as early as they usually do.
For sure. When you hear an odds maker say that and kind of tip his hand in some of the reservations he has about hanging numbers, it probably speaks volumes about the way that some of the professional bettors and the folks that live and die with handicapping golf have chosen to take on their thought process. But either way,
I'm probably speaking out of turn too, but just from what I've seen over the course of time, because of history, professional bettors have done very, very well with this tournament. And so, like you alluded to, they've been a little reluctant to fire early and often so far because of that weather. So that's a telltale sign to me that this might be one where they usually fire big on. They're you know, reserving some of those funds this go around.
And the one thing that you see too with this before we get to our second interview is that you typically have a chance with the major tournaments to fire larger limits. For the professionals, much like you mentioned every single week during the course of the NFL, professionals are going to allocate their time where they know they're able to get down the requisite amount of money instead of being able to plunk off maybe $250 or $500 on some of the smaller matchups. If they're able to move large sums, the strength of that information is only going to get better. And I think when you look at the Masters, the British Open, the U.S. Open, and the PGA, that's a chance for them to really move large amounts, unlike some of the tournaments throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, without question. We've always said this because everyone, you know, there's this, not to go back into the NFL, but there's always been this idea that the NFL is just so tough, but you're much better off hitting 55, 56% at 10 grand than you are 60% at 100 bucks. So limits play a huge role in what a lot of the professional outfits are looking to do.
Yep, exactly. And you said you hit the nail on the head. It's professional outfits, not to naysay some of the smaller bettors out there. They're looking to move different amounts. Niche sports come in handy, but I digress completely. And honestly, Payne, people didn't come to hear you speak about golf. They didn't come here to hear me speak about golf either. From a man whose job it is to set the odds on golf throughout the course of the season to another fellow who lives the sport 365 days a year down on the course. He's a longtime friend of the program and known football wagering enthusiast, currently a staff writer for Golf Channel. You can follow him on Twitter at WillGrayGC. Will, before we get started on the golf, I want to make sure that you and Payne, there's a safe distance. It's okay to have a Gator and a Seminole on the same golf podcast, correct?
Oh, see, I like how you bury that until after we start rolling.
Well, I didn't want to give you an opt-out here. I wanted to make sure that I gave you that, fluff intro. We got you eased into it, and therefore now that you can't be like, oh, I got a bad connection, I got
to
go.
Yeah. I don't really have much of a leg to stand on right now as it comes to Florida State, but, everything goes in cycles, I'll put it that way.
Hey, it's the nature of the beast. And, hey, the Florida Gators basketball program went a little deeper in the tournament than what FSU was able to do. I guess Masters main topic of discussion, as we know. But I want to start with the ridiculousness of the LPGA fiasco over the weekend that cost Lexi Thompson her win. What's been the discussion amongst the golf community and how this whole nonsense unfolded?
First of all, kudos to the LPGA for finding a way to make women's golf a discussion topic during Masters week. I didn't think they could pull it off, but they did. I think the key takeaway here is that the rule was applied correctly, but it seems terrible, right? I think from my perspective and a lot of people I've talked to, once the round ends, once you get to close of business and everyone signs off on the scores and everything like that from a tournament perspective, that's it. We can't be opening Pandora's box and going back 1, 2, 3 days and retroactively applying rulings. The problem is, if this had happened on Sunday during the final round and someone emailed the LPGA on Monday, there's nothing they could do about it. So not every round is treated the same. It was really an unfortunate break. It's pretty amazing that she was able to come back and do what she did. But there are a bunch of rule changes in golf that are probably going to be introduced in 2019. And I think a lot of people came to the realization that they'd like to speed up that timeline if they could.
Do you think this is something that you're going to see golf continue to live by, where people can email in if they notice or call in? I mean, it feels so antiquated in that you have allowing spectators and casual observers to impact the results of some of the sport's biggest events.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, golf can't stop getting in its own way. And I don't think that trend is going to come to a halt anytime soon. You know, if it's me, I would not allow for the call-ins and the emails and everything from viewers. I know that the guy that called in on Tiger's ruling, infamous though it was, at the 2013 Masters, he was a former tour pro and a former rules official, so it was a little different than Joe Schmo sitting on his couch and calling in. I still don't know what the call-in hotline is. I mean, I work for the Golf Channel, and I have not seen that red phone sitting around the office. I have no idea what number these people are calling or what email address they're sending it to, but it's unfortunate for the game. I think everyone agrees that it was a bad look for golf on Sunday, and that kind
of
sucks.
I mean, shit, Payne, you imagine how far off the rails this podcast would go if we let some of our listeners call in?
Ugly. It would be ugly.
Not to say they wouldn't add a different dynamic to offend their sensibilities out there as they listen to our Masters coverage, but it would take on a very different tenor, of course. And I guess, Will, from one woman that should have won a major over the weekend to one of golf's biggest names, we're not sure we may ever see in a golf major again. I know you were intimately involved with the Tiger Tracker for Golf Channel. What do you think the realistic odds are we ever see Tiger get back out there and maybe make the cut into the weekend of one of these big events?
Boy, I love that transition there from Lexi to Tiger. I would love to have Tiger Tracker's job, even though right now he's kind of collecting the unemployment checks. I don't think that we're ever going to realistically see Tiger back in a regular capacity. I was down there in the Bahamas in December. He played really well. Everyone's, you know, glass half full, thinking that this is going to be the year. This is the time that he finally was conservative with his approach to a recovery, and he took his time, and he goes and plays three rounds, and everything falls apart. And, you know, right now, he's the boy who cried wolf. You can't believe anything he says. You can't believe anything the agent says. It's all spin. And so it's really just a situation where I don't know what to expect until I see him step to the first tee. And if that's not going to be the Masters, which he says is always his most important tournament every year, I don't know when, looking down the 2017 calendar, he would really make a return. I mean, the U.S. Open is going to a farm in Wisconsin in June that no one has ever really seen. The British Open course, Birkdale, he hasn't played in 20 years. So there's not another tournament on the list where you're like, yeah, this is definitely one that he's going to be geared up to really want to play. So if we're essentially looking at two and a half years off and he's 41, 42 years old, I think that we're basically done.
We had Jeff Sherman on earlier on the podcast, and he talked about Tiger right now on Wednesday having the 11th most tickets on him to win the Masters. In your opinion, for someone who's in and around the sport every day, is golf in a better place without Tiger Woods now, when we talk about some of the big names, the emergence of Dustin Johnson? Or would it be a much better place if we had Tiger Woods, even if he was only able to compete, not at that high level that we'd grown accustomed to when he was absolutely dominating the sport?
Oh, no, without question, Tiger Woods on one leg is better for golf than Tiger Woods sitting at home. I mean, just the number of people that would be interested, that would tune in, that would pay attention just on the off chance that he stumbles out of the gates and goes 77-62 or whatever. But just his mere presence brings out an entire different group of casual fans, people that don't necessarily tune into golf all the time. So, you know, we can sit here and talk about the future of golf and that it is definitely very bright with guys like Spieth and McIlroy and DJ at the top, but it is different in the post-Tiger world. And I think if we all had our druthers, we'd rather have him be involved in the next 5 years, let's say.
We know all about the subculture that seems to create the interconnectedness, I guess, between golf and gambling. How much gambling discussion goes on during the events between players without dropping specific names?
I would say a fair amount. I don't know about golf betting on the tournament itself, but Tuesday is match day on the PGA Tour. When you're watching Tuesday practice rounds, there are whatever group and threesome or foursome is playing, there's a good chance that some coin is being exchanged. Phil Mickelson is a guy who is known and legendary for his Tuesday games that you get him, and he likes to play with, you know, Ricky Fowler and a couple other of those guys, that they say that it really gets them in the competitive mindset. They need something on the line on Tuesday. It's going to help them build for Thursday, Friday, and into the weekend. So I don't know if there's a lot of locker room talk about, you know, oh, hey, you're minus 120 today in a matchup against me or anything like that. But Tuesday especially is the day where you'll see guys reach into their wallet, and I think it helps them get ready for the tournament.
Will, as we're talking golf and gambling, I think it's probably an easy transition to, you know, go over Phil Mickelson and what's going on off the course. Any updates on the case and his involvement with a very popular gambling name? I saw he won't be going on the stand. Kind of give us a Cliff's Notes version of what's going on in that case. Any updates that have taken place recently?
Yeah, it's kind of been a lingering black cloud for Phil for the last couple of years. I mean, basically, the timeline, according to the federal authorities, is that, you know, he's had contact with Billy Walters, noted sports gambler, and Billy is currently on trial for insider trading. And the theory, according to the government, is that he gave Mickelson a stock tip where he made close to $1 million by holding his stock for less than a week, and then a few months later wrote Billy Walters a check for $2 million to pay off a gambling debt. So Mickelson has not been accused of any wrongdoing. He was named as a relief defendant. This is getting way more technical than we need to get. But the bottom line is, we like technical on this podcast. He paid back the money he made off the stock trade. So he paid back about $1 million to the government. Now, this past week, the whole notion that he paid Billy Walters $2 million came out. I had spoke to him about it in Houston, actually, and his response was just very – he just said, I have nothing else to add. So it was not a denial by any stretch of the imagination. When the federal government is the one presenting the case, I think it takes on a little bit more gravity. But, you know, when you're a guy making $48-50 million a year, $1-2 million certainly gets scaled down a bit. But I definitely think that it's something that he would prefer not to have to be asked about, that he would just rather stick to the golf. But when you have the federal case and your name is tied to it, you're going to get the questions.
If you've looked into the case a little bit, any kind of feeling on the prosecution's case here? Do they have a good chance for conviction, do you think?
Well, it would be any chance they have is tied more to Billy Walters, and it's certainly not anything that they're trying to press on Mickelson. I haven't done a deep dive into the case, but certainly they felt that they had enough to take it to trial. The trial is currently ongoing up in Manhattan Federal Court. So, you know, as far as I know, this is as close as they've gotten to pinning something on Billy Walters in many a moon. So they clearly feel like this was the case that they were able to move on and hope for a conviction.
All right, we've done some of the housekeeping, re-golf, and some of the things going on. Obviously, the big names, some recent events. Augusta, when we look at the Masters, Will, and how this course plays, what are some of the things that you guys look at in the golf community when it comes to trying to project a winner? Is it putting? Is it greens in regulation? The weather, we know, could play a role here and change some of the dynamic on Thursday, Friday, early in the weekend. You know, what are some of the things a casual observer, and of course, you know, we cater to more of a gambling listenership, so to speak, should be looking at when they're trying to get their feet wet and get their head wrapped around everything that'll take place this weekend?
A lot of the stuff you talked about is stuff that we'll definitely look at. You start with the weather. It's going to dump buckets on Wednesday at Augusta, so the course is going to get a little soft, but they have so much technology under the ground that basically the green jackets at Augusta can make the course play however they want it to, firm, fast, soft, in between. The issue Thursday, Friday is going to be the wind. It's really going to blow and swirl, and I think it's going to make the course more difficult than it has in years past, which makes you want to lean on guys with a little bit more experience. You know, everyone's talking about John Rahm as a red hot rookie coming into his first tournament, but you know, there's something to be said for a learning curve at Augusta National. So one of the first places that I would go is to look at that past performance at Augusta. This is the only major in golf that goes back every year to the same course, and there's a lot to be said for the guys that build up notes. Justin Rose has talked about the fact that he has the same yardage book for Augusta National that he had in 2003. And every year he just adds and adds and adds to it, just gets little nuggets here and there. But when you're trying to find a winner, Augusta National's primary defense is on the greens, and it can make a good putter look absolutely foolish. We saw Ernie Els with a 6-putt last year on the very first hole. So I would say scrambling stats, 100 yards and in with the wedge, strokes gained putting, things like that. You're going to need to make your fair amount of birdies, but more importantly, the guys have to make 6, 8, 10, 12 footers for par. That's what's going to separate them.
You mentioned John Rahm, currently 20-1 to win the tournament right now at BetOnline. And you guys, of course, at Golf Channel have a lot of those statistics available for folks that are looking to try and do some of their own due diligence and proper research. Encourage them to check that out. The big names atop the leaderboard, three favorites that I guess we'll call a cut above. Jeff Sherman said that Jason Day's numbers have come way down as he deals with the unfortunate circumstances with some family issues. You see him at 18-1 at BetOnline. But Dustin Johnson, the slight favorite at 6-1. Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy both at 8-1. We know we're not going to get rich betting any of that trio of names, but if I was looking to try and build my portfolio around one of those three favorites, is there one of those guys that you prefer over the others, given the course conditions, the way things play out, current form, everything else that factors into the equation?
Yeah, I think I would want to add a few shares of Rory. You know, when it comes to DJ, you can't ask for anything more than what he's done entering this week. He's won 3 straight events, 2 WGCs, very clearly the number one player in the world. But there has not been a favorite to win the Masters since Tiger in 2005. And DJ is red hot, but he's not Tiger Woods. Jordan Spieth, I think that he's still a bit in his own head after last year with the collapse on the 12th hole. He spent the entire year having to answer questions about it. He said a couple weeks ago, I'm ready for this Masters in particular just to be over. He just wants to get it done with. So I'm not exactly bullish on either of those two, but I do think that Rory certainly has the game to win at Augusta. He should have won it by now. Everyone thinks he will win it at some point. There is that added pressure of trying to close out the fourth leg of the career Grand Slam that I think could impact him if he gets into contention Saturday and Sunday. But If the course is playing even a little bit soft, that's something that really will help Rory with the high ball flight. Could be affected by the wind, but more so if it's a little soft and receptive. If you look back at the four majors that Rory has won, almost all of them have had those conditions where you need to hit the ball a long distance in the air and then play it from there.
And when we look at some of those matchup prices right now at BetOnline, Dustin Johnson, $1.30 favorite over Rory McIlroy. Johnson, $1.40 favorite over Jordan Spieth. We've seen a little bit of professional money come in on Dustin Johnson against Hideki Matsuyama, and a number that's held pretty steady, Rory McIlroy, right around $1.30 against Spieth. I guess as we go down the odds board, aside from the favorites that we know should be in contention, or at least one of them, come Sunday, we've seen a number of other familiar names. I've seen Ricky Fowler thrown about 18-1, 20-1. Hideki Matsuyama, who I think's form right now, maybe not indicative of his price crashing, given all the momentum he built earlier in the season. Phil Mickelson, we know he's a household name. People are going to try and bet him. If I'm looking at guys maybe in that second tier, so to speak, is there someone that you think either flying under the radar or that makes an awful lot of sense given the way they're playing coming into Augusta?
Yeah, I am captaining the Justin Rose bandwagon this week. All aboard. We got plenty of good seats. This guy is, you want to talk about flying under the radar.
Hold on one second. Did you and Sherman have a little talk here? Because unprovoked, that's the guy that Sherman gave us earlier in the show.
Well, I will say that I know that Sherman took a bunch of money on him about 2 months ago, and that kind of put him on my radar. But no one is talking about him, and he's played some really good golf over the last few weeks, second in Hawaii, fourth at both Torrey Pines and Riviera, which are two really tough courses. And I just look at his track record at Augusta. He was second 2 years ago when Spieth blew everyone out of the water, but Justin Rose's score would have won all but a handful of previous Masters. He's finished in the top 25 seven out of the last 8 times he's played this event. I love the consistency, and I just love the fact that no one's talking about him. I think that he and his caddy have a good thing going. They're very businesslike about it. They have a similar mindset to what they took into the Olympics last year where they won the gold medal, and I think that I would much rather have him at north of 20-1 or so than take any of the top three guys.
When we talk long shots, we know there are going to be a few guys that are going to have a chance to claim a green jacket. Danny Willett a year ago came out of nowhere to cash some nice long shot tickets. The one name I've seen thrown about, and I won't claim to be an expert by any stretch of the imagination, a player at 50-1 by the name of Tyrell Hatton. Are there other guys that you think, maybe it's a Bill Haas, maybe it's a Mark Leishman, that really warrant a little bit of a dabble and exploration as we talk about odds 50-1 or maybe even greater?
Yeah, I think that the Bill Haas thing is interesting. I do think that his name is coming up for a lot of good reasons. He's leading the tour right now and scrambling. It's weird that he's been playing so long and he, up until last year, didn't have a top 10 in any major. So that's a big red flag, but it could be something where you might be able to hedge off a position in the weekend if you grab a little bit of him at north of 100-1. But the guy that I like is Daniel Berger. I've seen him, you know, in the 60-70-1 range, something like that. This guy is not lacking confidence. Let's put it that way. He had a couple years at Payne's alma mater at Florida State there, and then turned pro, and he's really played well in his first couple years. He won for the first time in June, and he played well, tied for 10th. It is Masters debut last year. He played really well in the final round on Sunday in Houston. And I just think that his game is another one that's kind of like Rory, where he's got the good ball flight for Augusta National. And come the weekend, there's no one that he could stand across the first tee from that's really going to intimidate him. I think that he's a guy that is coming in on a little bit of a hot streak.
And last but not least, for everything that goes up, there must be something that comes down. There are a list of certain players for folks that are trying to round out their pool entries that you would encourage them to try and stay away from as we get closer to the first tee.
I think you mentioned one earlier, Hideki Matsuyama. He was really lighting the world on fire around December, January, February. Has not played well in the last 5 or 6 weeks, although he has finished in the top 10 each of the last 2 years at Augusta National. It's always an issue of putting with him, and I'm not sure that I would really want to be siding with him on any sort of matchup. But another guy is Henrik Stenson. The guy won the British Open 9 months ago, but in all of his trips to Augusta, he's never finished better than a tie for 14th. He's talked about the fact that course is a little bit in his head. His advantage is hitting great drives off the tee, and it's really negated by the course setup at Augusta. So I would not be jumping to bet Henrik Stenson or even to side with him in a matchup.
One last thing, Will, before we let you go, be honest. What kind of pools do you guys have going on around the Golf Channel offices when we talk about the Masters or some of the other major stopping points along the tour?
There's a few. We'll dabble for sure. I think the one that has the most traction in the newsroom is kind of a four flight option where you've got you pick eight players out of the A, B, C, D flight and then add up the winnings at the end of the week. But we'll look at DraftKings stuff. We'll look at the board and see what's going on for sure. It's not exactly church and state, let's say.
Well, that's a good thing then. We talk to folks from the NFL. We know they pretend that what we do in this fine realm doesn't exist. I know golf much more willing to try and embrace always to get people to have a little skin in the game. Well, can't thank you enough. I know it's a busy time for you for stopping by to share a little bit of insight on the first major and the most popular one in the eyes of bettors. For folks that want to keep tabs on your stuff, they can follow you on Twitter at WillGrayGC. And any other projects you have in the works over there at Golf Channel?
Yeah, we've got a full team up there in Augusta plugging away at golfchannel.com. So all the latest news, you'll be able to find it there. And maybe I'll make it out to the desert and see you boys sooner rather than later, Todd.
We'll be able to we'll roll out the red carpet for you. We'll give you the bet the board treatment and make sure we can get you to the window, you know, a couple of times, whether it's the NFL, college football, CFL, maybe a little NASCAR. You know the money's just as green across all sports.
You had me until NASCAR. I still can't get around to that. But other than that, I'm in.
Well, thanks again. Enjoy the weekend, and hopefully if you're dabbling yourself, you find a way to make a few bucks.
Sounds good. Good talking to you boys.
Man, Payne, I really thought, given Will's fanhood for Florida, he'd have a much bigger haymaker to throw your way. But I guess from the last few football seasons, and you failed to move the football against that Seminoles defense, Will was a bit humbled coming on the podcast.
Yeah, for sure. And I couldn't talk too much crap since I'm technically not an alumni. You actually have to graduate to do that.
How many actual hours did you complete in Tallahassee?
Nah. Maybe just got a pair of shoes on the way out. That's about it.
Hey, I mean, that's probably very similar to what a lot of the athletes that have gone through those doors have come away with.
Oh, come on. Come on.
I have to take shots somewhere along the way.
It's college football. It's like the most crooked industry known to mankind. I mean, college sports are like the most crooked thing anyone's ever, any industry ever been in. College athletics about as shady as it gets.
More crooked, college football or college basketball?
The stories are a little better in college basketball because there's just not as many. You know, you can kind of put the face to the name and there's not as many guys and there's some great stories there. I would probably say football a little shadier, but I mean college basketball is right up there, especially when you start digging into all the coaching stuff and what it takes to get jobs and what's required to get jobs and, you know, having relationships so vital there.
I mean, I can't imagine that any of these guys are Boy Scouts. And actually, it doesn't fit in with golf at all, and I know it was a major topic. People came at me full bore. As you know, I'm not a proponent of this whole pay-for-play stuff when it comes to college athletics. I mean, the scholarship has some value. We know these guys are getting paid under the table. I never understood why anyone pushes for that kind of thing, knowing these players are going to have to pay taxes on those cash handouts.
Yeah. You're an education guy, so I saw that tweet.
I was waiting for you to come at me and fire me, but I also know a bunch of guys in banking that make, let's call it what it is, $85,000 a year. They're working 100-plus hours, if not more. And, you know, you put your time in for a couple of years, and that big payday is at the end of the rainbow. I see college athletics no different than any type of entry-level position. Maybe I'm completely off base, which I am on plenty of topics.
There's no question. And, like, let's not put our heads in the sand. Having kind of grown up with a lot of friends that went on to play college basketball and didn't necessarily need to be at the highest level, whether it was Sun Belt Basketball Conference or soccer, whatever it was. I had a couple friends, and you'd be shocked at the money they're getting each semester. So I could only envision what guys at Alabama are making a semester. When you talk about Sun Belt athletes, you know, making $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a semester for college basketball. Like, I can only envision what a Bama football player that's top tier is getting each semester. So let's not put our heads in the sand. On top of the education, there's some funds through way of scholarship that are being paid out.
You know what college athletes aren't getting money or cash handouts? Role players and bench guys on Division III hockey teams. Those guys aren't those guys aren't getting a damn thing. And trust me, I would go into liquor stores. I couldn't even get free beer out there.
I figured that's how you were funding this podcast.
No, I mean, if we were funding that podcast, we'd be recording this with tin cans and we'd have other issues to try and address. But, you know, I do have funny stories. We'll get into some more of those anecdotes, you know, over the course of football season. We'll tease them a little bit. But I think we've done well. We realized what we knew. We realized what we didn't. We kind of treated it like a two-guard system, threw the ball at the rim, and let our special guest, Jeff Sherman, who you can follow on Twitter at Golf Odds, and Will Gray, you can follow there as well, at Will Gray GC, take the ball, drive it middle of the fairway, maybe drive the green in two, and we'll have a chance to putt for birdie.
Well, you were initially going with the Roy Williams offensive analogy there, just kind of throw it at the rim and let Will and Jeff just put it back. That's kind of the offense that Roy Williams runs now.
And if you've seen my jumper, trust me, there are no first shots that are going in. The problem is no idea where that carom's ever going to go.
All right, let's wrap this up a little bit.
All right, we'll wrap it up. So, first Masters podcast officially in the books. Great information, as we said, from our two guests. Can't thank either of them enough. Also, remember to check out the promotions page. Of course, you'll find plenty of links for that at bettheboardpodcast.com. 35% reload bonus, 75% for new signups. So if you're not already playing through BetOnline, some of the greatest golf odds out there, props, matchups, outrights, updated daily throughout the course of the weekend. We gave Dave Mason a little bit of a break from this in the Final Four. He'll, of course, be back for the NBA as we continue to look for another guest to continue the trend that we're starting to build. So, Payne, any final parting words before folks run to finish up those pool entries, daily fantasy, and make their bets for Augusta?
Nothing too crazy. I think I will. I'll give them one bet that I made, and obviously it's piggybacking off Jeff and Will a little bit. You know, experience, from what I've seen, it tends to be something everyone talks about. And I was looking this up, and you know, Fuzzy Zeller, the only first-time golfer to win at Augusta in his first appearance since 1935. So that's key here. I think the other thing that they've all also mentioned is consistency. And that's why they're gravitating towards Justin Rose. You look at what he's done here, 9 top 25s and 11 Masters appearances, 7 in a row. So that's what you want. You want that consistency to make that run. Evade the big score. Par is good on the non-par fives. You just don't want to roll up that double or triple bogey and you have a shot. You do need to score on the par fives, from what I've seen, that's for sure. And I think Rose has enough pop off the tee to do that. I know they've alluded to using that 22-1 shot to win it at Bet Online. That might be worth a few pesos. But one bet I did make, because I like to get away from the props with huge hold, is the yes no prop. I went with yes, Justin Rose will have a top 20 finish. That was at even money, starting to leak a little bit out to minus 105, minus 10. But that is the one bet that I did make for the Masters.
Good to know, and hopefully folks can get to the window with your information, with Jeff, and some of Will's thought process. Remember, if you're not a veteran golf bettor, a few bucks goes a long way to keep you glued to your TV set come Sunday. So regardless of what you elect to do with this fine information, we'll be right back at you with NBA playoffs coverage, draft, a busy summer plan for us here at Bet the Board. So for Payne Insider, remember, you can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. And as always, like we say, make sure to follow the at Bet the Board Twitter account for some updates, information that we may have left out here. Give this podcast a retweet. The more eyeballs and ears that we get on the content allows us to do some creative things. Some big news coming throughout the course of the summer months. But in the meantime, best of luck with all your Master selection. And come the donning of the green jacket, hopefully we'll see you at the window.